What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to another episode of the Crafted Podcast. Podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, leather, electronics, and more. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, James Wright from Wood by Wright. How you doing, James?
I am doing fantastic. Why, thank you.
And Zach Herberholz from ZS Fabrications. What's going on, Zach?
How's it going?
Good. So today we have our first guest on the show, Chris Salamone. How do you pronounce your last name, Chris?
It's Salamone. So I always tell people it's like alimony with an S in front of it.
All right. Nice. So yeah, Chris Salamone from Four Eyes. You guys, if you don't already know who he is, just stop the podcast.
Where have you been?
Go watch every one of his videos and come back. One of my all-time favorite woodworking YouTubers. And yeah, so he's our first guest today. So excited to have him on. In case you guys are new to the podcast, we publish our episodes every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, basically everywhere podcasts are available. The website is craftedpodcast.com in case you want to learn more. And also, we just started a Patreon. So in case you guys want to support the show, that's a great way to... We got some after-hours shows. We have monthly hangouts, all that kind of stuff. So check us out as patreon.com/craftedpodcast. So I guess let's go ahead and move into what we're working on. So I guess, Chris, you want to kick us off since you're our first guest?
Sure. So kind of actually in a little break on for working on things. I just finished up my picture frame video that I put up almost a week ago. I got a couple other little videos that are in progress, but I'm kind of planning some big things to do during my Christmas break from my 9-to-5 job. So hopefully going to knock out a couple projects during that 10 days or whatever that I get off.
Nice. And what is your 9-to-5 job? I don't think I even necessarily know.
So yeah, I work in marketing, actually, for a college campus.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's cool. I mean, I get to, you know, do some creative stuff here and, you know, do some video and that kind of stuff. But I would definitely like to someday be able to just be on YouTube or, you know, making furniture.
Yeah. Nice. That's cool.
I don't think you're too far off, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You have skyrocketed. It's amazing, man. It's
Thank you. Really
impressive stuff. I mean, I think for very good reason. Your storytelling is just top notch, and obviously your furniture design is really incredible too. So I'm excited to have you on. So Zach, what you been working on, man?
Let's see. Well, I've been working on that console table, which is kind of an interesting project. Been doing that the past few days. Also been doing a little bit more work on the truck. I took it on the maiden voyage to the hardware store today because I bought one of those huge torches because I'm doing that console table is alder, and I'm burning it and sanding it and then putting some stain on it. And
oh, nice.
Well, I didn't have any probe.
You're doing the shushugiban thing?
Shushugi?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what the particulars. It's alder. I'm burning it lightly, sanding it down to even it out, putting some walnut stain on it, and then I'm going to shoot it with a toner around the edges and clear coat it. So
that'll make it match that steel frame a lot nicer.
Yeah. Did you get
I like that.
Inferno torch? Is that that's the one I got from
No, because that was like $60.
Yeah, it's super expensive.
It's a hose with a piece of metal with a hole in it, and that's too much money for me. So those things are nuts though, man. Those I think they're like weed burners or tar heaters. I don't know. But to me, it's if you guys have ever been in a hot air balloon before, it's like the same thing. Like, they're terrifying. The first time I pulled the trigger, I was like, I thought I was going to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was... It's hard not to... Don't do what I did. You'll see in the video, like, the first time I lit it, I started burning the top. Like, get playing with it out of your system before you work on a project, because it is so hard not to, like, squeeze that trigger and just...
I did it with white wood, like just, you know, the lightest wood ever from the home center, and it bowed into a Pringle, like, because I just burnt the crap out of it. Because, man, yeah, that is like, that just gets back to some primal instinct I have just to burn things to a crisp.
It's
with
a flamethrower.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seriously, it's a flamethrower. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But, I've used the hand torches. I've burned a lot of smaller projects, but I wanted to get kind of an more even coverage, so I bought this thing. But I know from using the small torches, you got to keep that thing moving, because if you have glue joints. I did a spline joint for the tabletop, and I know anytime there's glue in a project, you got to be careful when you heat it up, because it will split. It expands and contracts at a different rate than the wood. And it was pretty cool. So I think it's going to look neat. The dimensions for the table are a little bit weird, but those are the dimensions they gave me. So those are the dimensions I'm going with.
No, it's looking cool.
So that and a little bit on the truck. I took the truck to the store to get propane today, and I shouldn't have, because I don't even have a license plate on it yet. But that was a fun experience.
It's Florida.
I hope there's no cops listening.
Yeah.
It's too late. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, James, so how about you?
Go ahead.
I have actually been working on a thing called a dresser.
Mm.
Yeah? Yeah?
You're still not done with that?
No. I thought I had plenty of figured wood for all of the drawer fronts. And I have this pile of curly white oak. But the vast majority of it was about an inch too narrow to make drawer fronts out of. So I went back to the drawing board and decided to actually accentuate a glue line right down the middle of every drawer. And so it'll be curly wood, which is impossible to hide a glue line. And I'm going to be splitting all of these pieces so that each drawer front is made of a top piece and a bottom piece. So I don't know. Nice. I'm hoping it makes the dresser look a little bit longer, because you'll have all of these thin, long pieces as opposed to shorter drawer looks.
Yeah, that was they were talking about that on like Wood Talk the other day, where with highly figured wood like that, it's almost impossible just to make it look fluid. So it's almost better to make the seam obvious and make it a design feature rather than trying to hide it. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So have you started to tackle the actual drawer boxes yet? I know that was going to be like a major repetitive marathon for you.
I've started cutting them all out. I won't be getting to dovetailing probably until after Christmas.
Cool.
But because it'll end up being, what was it, 40 board feet worth of white oak that has to be four side planed. So I'm going to have a few days ahead of me with a hand plane.
That's brutal, dude.
Man, I feel like I can't consider myself a woodworker, because I haven't done dovetails yet.
Me neither. I've cut one pair of dovetails. They're actually sitting behind me on my shelf here at WIA, the hand tool whatever Olympics guys.
Olympics?
Yeah,
I'm like doing stuff backwards. I'm like doing this weird metal wood tusk tenon stuff, but no. No dovetails yet.
I feel like,
well, to be honest, I mean, they don't really. There are other ways of doing it that are much simpler and quicker, and just as strong, if not stronger.
Yes.
And the reason I'm doing it particularly in all these drawers is, number one, with hand tools, it really doesn't take that much more time to do that than any other joinery, and it also adds to the style and the look that I'm going for, because they will be showing on the front of all the drawers.
Oh, okay.
So I can feel the hate mail already from saying that there are stronger joints. I'm sure there are, but I can tell our woodworking is boiling right now.
Well, when you try to make money as like a woodworker, hand cut dovetails, unless you are some famous dude who can charge a ridiculous amount of money for your work, I feel like that is like the last joint that I would pick for a drawer box. You know, something that's hidden inside a piece, like a client is never really gonna inspect. You know, it's behind a drawer front inside a carcass. I mean, it's just I don't know. I mean, I guess, James, it's gonna be like a through dovetail into the drawer front. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and reversed, so you'll actually be seeing the tails on the front.
Oh, nice. Cool. Nice.
Because otherwise it just looks like finger joints.
Yeah. And so in that case, that is like a total design feature, and that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess I've been working on, I've never made cutting boards before, so I've been making cutting boards for the last 2 days, which has been a royal pain. I never really want to do that again, but I bought this enormous pile of scraps. I found some dude on the Asheville Classifieds on Reddit, and $40 for just a ridiculous amount of scraps, and all kind of, they're all hardwood, and so just spent the last 2 days like processing them and then gluing them up into long grain and then, you know, cutting them and turning them on end and making them that kind of chaotic style of ingrain cutting board. And I'm really happy with the way they're looking, but it's just incredible how much work is involved in getting them to the state that is anything near like usable. I mean, it's just so much, and I still haven't even flattened the ingrain slab, which I'm still, I don't know, I've read so much about it, and it seems like passing it through the planer is kind of sketchy with an ingrain cutting board. I mean, even though that MTM wood guy is, he seems to do it all the time, and like Jackman
works. Well, if you have a helical head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it seems like.
But if you're just with a straight knife, it's a little...
Yes, and I have a straight knife. So, although I did just rotate the blades like today in anticipation of maybe giving it a shot. So,
do you have a card scrapers?
I do not own a card scraper, but I can.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I know.
What?
Wow! I know what I'm getting you for Christmas, man.
Yeah.
Well, the other option is you can always put a piece on the edge to sacrifice.
That's what I'm thinking of doing, and that's what I was watching. You know, Paul Jackman, his one of his ingrain cutting board videos, and he just glued on a sacrificial strip on the end, and that kind of, you know, mitigated any sort of blowout you're going to get at the end. And, you know, take really, really thin passes, and like I have the DeWalt, the whatever their nicer one is, the DW735 or whatever, so it's not awesome, but it's like the best of the lunchbox variety, and it seems to handle that stuff pretty decently, so...
The other option is if you can pre-chamfer them if you're going to put a chamfer on the edge.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea, actually. Yeah, I am going to put
a chamfer. You still might get tear out into the chamfer, though, possibly. I wouldn't.
Huh.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the sacrificial board is probably the way to go. I think that would, you know, because then if there's any blowout, it's on the sacrificial board, so it doesn't really matter, and it doesn't add that much work, so... yeah, that's been the last 2 days, and then I'm trying to finish up this computer desk. I am delivering it to a guy in Atlanta like into next week, so I gotta get that finished, and yeah, so that's a lot of work ahead of me for this weekend and the beginning of next week, but should be able to get it done in time, so I'm excited to have that thing done. It's gonna be cool. I got the finish in. I'm gonna use the General Finishes milk paint, and then their high performance on top of that, so should be a pretty cool, just nice black painted, durable finish on the plywood, and should look pretty interesting and have some interesting features. It's just crazy because there's all these random holes in it because this person I'm building it for is mounting all of his like motherboard and video card and basically all of his computer components inside the top of the desk. So there's all these holes that I have to cut to a very specific size in a very specific location. And man, it's very, very particular. So going to be a lot of jigsaw work over the next couple of days, but should be able to get it.
Seriously looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm that's one of those projects that like I'm hoping could maybe go viral among the like non-woodworking crowd, you know, like some of these tech people have done these types of builds, so I'm hoping maybe, I don't know, we'll see. Because it really, you know, when you're working with plywood, you don't need that crazy of tools. I mean, you could get the big box store to break down the major cuts and then just use a circular saw for everything else, and, you know, you don't need a whole lot else outside of that, so no planers or jointers needed, so... Yeah, we'll see. It's a fun one, though. It's cool. I got these crazy gas struts to lift up the top so like he can access all the computer components.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like, I guess when they're usually used for like cabinet doors that lift up and out instead of, you know, I guess horizontally, they lift up vertically. Yeah, they're pretty cool. They're like 22 and a half pounds of force per strut. So, you know, for like a 70 by 30 plywood top, I'm going to use 3, and that should be enough. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So anyway,
I like seeing those projects that are different, you know. It's
yeah.
Different reason, you know. It's not just a, granted, I like table and chair videos too, but I mean, it's nice to see something that's like nobody else has done.
Well, that's like the nice thing about commission work, you know. It's like,
yeah, well, that's why I mean, I think it's one of the things I love about the fact that 95% of my work is commission work. Yeah. Is it's stuff that I would never build. And I talked about that in one of the previous episodes, but like there's nothing that I've built in the past month that I would build for myself.
No.
Partly because I'm just cheap, but the other part is because I wouldn't, you know. Yeah. It just, my demands are different. Yeah. So.
No, you get paid to go play around in the shop and try to figure out how to make something work, which is just really, really fun. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be doing an organ cabinet.
Yeah, that's.
I know you think that's, it is weird, but it's
super weird.
It cool.
But it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be the only organ cabinet build on YouTube. Like, you're going to be the only person on YouTube with an organ cabinet build. I guarantee it. That's awesome.
What's funny is I've been filming these ingrain cutting boards, and in the background you can see this enormous organ sitting in my shop. And I feel like I'm going to get so many random comments like, why do you have an organ sitting right next to your planer? It's that thing is
huge. You know what we should do? We should have like a month long challenge where like we pick a few of us and our goal is just to have completely random objects in the background of our video and see how many people notice.
People are very keen eyed. I feel like, you know, like they, either that or just very distractible. I mean, you can have the weirdest crap in the background. You'll get like, I get comments on like the stickers on my fridge and like my hats and stuff. It's like, are you really, like, pay attention to what I'm doing, you know? Like, pay attention to my woodwork. It's funny. But cool. Well, I guess let's go ahead and move into the main show topic, and that is our guest, Chris. Been very quiet here.
I got nothing, man.
Yeah, man.
I'm just joking. Go for it.
Let's chat it out. So I guess, first of all, my question is, like, how did you get into making stuff in woodworking? I mean, obviously, it's... You know, you're quite good at it. So what's your background and all that stuff?
Yeah. So growing up, I didn't really do any of that stuff. Like, you know, my dad wasn't like a builder or anything like that. Really nobody in my family, you know, I wasn't like a super handy person or anything like that. Pretty much for me, it was after I graduated from college, got a job. And then my wife and I started looking for a house. We bought a house and I just started getting into 3D modeling just for like interior design, basically just to, you know, figure out how we were going to lay it out. That kind of just led to drawing furniture and an interest in furniture. I probably just sat there and like drew furniture for like a year or two before I ever even cut a piece of wood. Wow. And I was like, all right, let's see if I can actually build one of these things that I'm drawing. So I found a community college and I took a course where, in the first semester, we pretty much just had to build like a project that the instructor came up with, which was just like a little cabinet essentially. And you know, it just had all different types of joinery. So it was basically just an exercise in learning different types of joinery. And then I took the class again the following semester and it was literally just open shop time. So, you know, a shop way bigger than, you know, probably 5 of my garage or I don't know, 10 of my garage, and an instructor who knew what he was doing. So I could ask questions too and kind of start to figure things out. So I designed a coffee table, for that class, built it, and it came out looking cool, but like wasn't the most structurally sound. Probably I had like a really bad end grain to end grain joint with just reinforced with a couple of, dowels. So
I like everybody trying not to laugh over end groin.
End groin.
My end groin. Yeah. I had a dowel.
You guys can't see
groin.
It, but everybody was really, really fighting that one hard.
There's a lot of sexual innuendo parts in wood.
Dude, my wife.
Groin.
My wife is always busting James's balls about, like, she feels like you just want to, like, basically marry your saws.
Make love.
The way you describe your saws, it's very sensual. It's hilarious.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's like the way it feels in my hand, the wood in my hands, and it's like it's just
there is a certain level of intimacy that James has with his tools that I hope to attain someday.
Yes, I aspire to that level of intimacy. That's hilarious.
Why do you think I always blush when my wife comes into the shop?
Anyway, so in groin joints. So yeah, Chris. So you're taking a local class.
So I took a local class, made a good looking table with some bad end groin to joinery.
Never good.
But you know, it was enough to say, okay, I can do this. You know, and I can get better from here. And so pretty much from there, I just started buying some equipment, converting my garage into a workshop and started building stuff. And then within a year, I would say I started doing commission pieces and started a side business. And I did that for about 4 years. And actually, so going back to kind of what you guys were just talking about, I had the opposite experience when I was doing commission pieces where like 90% of my orders were this one piece. Mm. And, you know, people would just want it like slightly modified. And it was a cool piece and I was proud of it and everything, but it got kind of boring just building the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And I felt it's this piece called Bad Larry. And so that's actually something that I want to build in the future. It's basically a credenza that's like trapezoid shaped.
Yeah, I've seen that in your videos.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm hoping, because I don't have one, so I would like to have one for myself. So I'm hoping to build that coming up soon. And like I was saying, I want to do some more bigger builds. So that's one that I have on my short list. But yeah, I just got kind of bored building the same things over and over again and felt like I was kind of stagnating. I wasn't really learning anything new. And also it sucked because I didn't have anything that I built in my house. Like the only things I had in my house were like prototypes and basically just like messed up stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I want some good furniture in my house. So I had been thinking about going to YouTube for a while. And so then basically at the end of last year, I said, okay, I'm just going to finish up all of the orders that I have and then start doing stuff on YouTube. So I just started, I put up my first video in March and I really wish I had gone to it sooner. Like,
yeah,
I felt like
March of, was it March of this year or March of last year?
March of this year.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So, yeah, it hasn't even been a year yet.
Ridiculous. So do you have a background in video? Because, I mean, I feel like you must.
Kind of. So, yes, but really only, like, goofing around, not professionally. Was, you know, like the kind of stuff you'd make with your friends or whatever, just making, like, dumb little videos. So, yeah, I knew how to edit, and I had experience, like, recording music. And so I kind of feel like it was almost like the culmination of, like, my interests coming together. Yeah. In YouTube, you know, being able to kind of just incorporate those things I was interested in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like that's one of your big talents is being able to tell a story and set the music to it. That's, I think, one of the big standouts, at least for me. I'm such a, you know, music person that the soundtrack of your videos just fits so perfectly. And I know you record some of your own stuff and some of like your friend's stuff. And I just feel like that adds such another level of, you know, instead of the generic, you know, iMovie music or whatever,
yeah.
You know, it's just such a cool thing to be able to add. That's,
it's funny. If you watch the first video, it actually has like a very different tone in the music. It's like this very like, ambient, new age kind of music that I had recorded for it. I think it was like overly relaxing. And then I was like, okay, like it still worked, but I was like, I can definitely do something different. So now it either me or my friend, we just basically improvise guitar for like, I don't know, 15 minutes. And then I'll just kind of pick and pull pieces from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of like get like the ending parts and the beginning parts. And then the middle can kind of do whatever. But as long as like those parts are emphasized with the music, then it usually finds like that tone that the rest of my videos have.
Yeah.
What's your main guitar?
The guitar that I use?
Yeah.
It's an acoustic. It's from a company called Alvarez.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have one of them.
Okay. Yeah. It was like my dad's. He probably got it like in the mid-80s or something. And then, he replaced it with something else. And so I took it.
Nice.
Yeah, they're good. I have some Taylors and stuff, and my Alvarez is like one of my go-tos, and it's like probably the cheapest guitar I own, and somehow, like, for certain songs, it's perfect.
Yeah, this thing's probably like 30 years old, I would say, and been beaten to hell. Like, you know, we've banged it on everything so many times, but still sounds good.
Yeah. Old wood, man. Have you ever thought about building an instrument? I feel like that would be a cool take to see, like, a guitar shape by you.
I've thought about it. I actually got contacted by this guy in Germany that builds guitars, and so he wanted to work with me to design one, and I was really interested in it, but just haven't had the time to really pursue it. But
nice.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool, an electric guitar.
Huh. Yeah, that was one of the more rewarding projects I've done so far. I feel like I'm realizing that making something that's playable is really, I don't know, it has some sort of extra level of coolness when you finish it. You know, the fact that you can pick it up and play it. There was this video I saw the other day, this guy making it's like an Irish flute type of thing. I forget what it's called. It's like a low D something, like flute or something like that. But, you know, he was essentially machining wood on a metal lathe and then machined all these brass pieces to connect it, and then just this gorgeous Irish kind of jig music at the end that he was playing on an instrument he built. And I don't know, I just feel like that is such a cool thing to be able to do. And those are some of the most fun projects I've had so far.
Did you make an electric or an acoustic?
Yeah, I built a Telecaster, like a Telecaster style, okay. 69 thin line. So it was
nice.
It was all chambered, and it was quite the project for me. I had never touched a router. I was like even more of a woodworking noob than I am now. Like, never had used a jointer. I mean, it was never resawed anything on a bandsaw. It was like so many new experiences for me. Like, I can't believe it actually is playable. And yeah, that was huge for me. But, you know, I used some router templates, and that made a huge difference. And, you know, just a bunch of flush trim and template bits, and ended up with a playable guitar. I didn't do the neck because I knew, like, I'm a guitarist, and I knew that if there was something to mess up, it would be the neck. And there's so much, like, kind of tooling involved in building a neck that I didn't want to spend, you know, $400 to build one neck. So, it was a lot of fun, though. I mean, it's a really, really cool thing. Very, very rewarding.
It's actually what Squires are made for.
Yeah. Just stealing the necks.
They're made taking the necks off.
Yeah.
Peeling that sticker off.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Pejudo did with his CNC guitar. He just got an old Les Paul studio, like an Epiphone Les Paul studio, and ripped out all the electronics in the neck and CNC'd a body. Because, I mean, you know, building the neck is really hard. I mean, there's a lot of crap to get wrong there.
I
think the best way to go about it, honestly, is come up with a body design and then just find a guy in Germany who will do the rest.
Yeah, that.
Well, there is a company called Warmoth.
Oh yeah, that's where I got the neck from.
Yeah, that's if you want something specific, that's the place to go. And they'll even do them with like big block headstocks so that you can cut out whatever shape you want.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's
nice.
I'm gonna play that someday.
I highly, highly recommend Warmoth, because I mean, there's like a list of like 35 specs on this neck. It's ridiculous. It was overwhelming, the amount of choices, because I mean, the radius and the type of fret wire, and you know, stainless steel versus regular steel, and obviously the fretboard wood, and then the actual neck wood, and there's just so many choices.
Truss rods, yeah.
Yeah.
There's like 20 different truss rods.
Yeah. Yeah, it was overwhelming. So I'm glad I...
Whether you do or don't want end groin fretboard. End groin fingerboard.
That's a big choice. You know, it's a big discount if you do the end groin.
You don't want to finger your end groin.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, man.
This is digressing.
Oh, man.
It's funny. It seems like a lot of the woodworkers on YouTube are musicians.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Me too.
Well, there's a natural connection between the creative mind and the musician's mind.
Certainly. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, William Walker's whole thing that he's just done recently, the Maker Music thing looks cool. And I mean, it is interesting that music seems to play such a big role in a lot of the videos that stand out, yeah. You know, because it's a big thing, you know, and it's something that's easy to overlook, and it helps with the pacing of your videos and just the whole emotional response you get. So, yeah, it's
super I totally important. Feel like I, you know, at the end of each of my videos, I always try to like say something that is either like a joke or like sounds important. And I feel like it's like having that little note that like hits right when I say it.
Oh, yeah.
You can almost say anything and it just like gives weight to it.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, no, totally.
I liked your Q&A video with the scripting. That was that was good.
Thank you.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
See, and then it all depends on your audience, because I try and do that and my audience hates it.
Yeah, some people are like, I don't want music. I mean, it's there is
Santal world though.
Yeah, there's a weird subset of people who, well, like Jimmy's videos, like they don't want music there. They just want high pitched tool noise, you know, because that's like,
yeah,
that's what they like. That's what they're used to, and because he's, you know, started incorporating a little more music into his stuff recently, and it's and then like he started doing like a lot of the stock iMovie songs, which are the same ones that like Wood Whisperer uses, but he'll speed it up or slow it down. And anyway, it's really weird. I don't know if you guys have noticed there's a big parallel yes. between them. And anyway, it sounds like the Wood Whisperer's music is like playing a baritone guitar. It's like super slowed down and weird. It's funny. So another question I had written down was, where do you get your design inspiration? Because it seems like you have a really kind of refined style, and I wonder where you kind of found that style. I mean, I would imagine that, you know, Eames and people like that are influences of yours. I mean, who do you attribute that to?
So not any particular person, but definitely like mid-century modern stuff tends to be what I've always just kind of liked. In terms of like, I mean, I would say it comes from all different places. So sometimes it's by the constraints of a project. So, you know, maybe you have a particular space that you have to fit it in, or, you know, it has to be used to do something specific. But I mean, honestly, like in terms of designing, the way I usually go about it, it's pretty much drawing like 20 different iterations of it. So, you know, I'll draw like a first version, and the first version is usually never that good. It's just like a very rough idea of what I want it to be, but proportions are all off, and I don't know, you can just kind of look at it and say that's not balanced looking, and so you just say, okay, well, what's wrong with it? And you just keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking until eventually it feels right. And then there's usually like that, not like a aha moment or anything, but just like there'll just be this moment where you're like, okay, it's like it's almost there, like I can tell it's 90% there. And then it's just like little detail things that you have to finish off. But like I'd say, like, I think maybe a lot of people overlook the design process. Like, they want to rush to just start building. And I know a lot of people kind of just improvise while they're building. And I've done that, like, very few times. I think the one video I have where I did that was the simple wall hanger thing. And that's just because it was such a simple piece. There wasn't really anything to, other than the dimensions that I had to really worry about going in. But, like, I'll spend, you know, 5 hours just redrawing something over and over so that I can be excited about building it when I'm out there. It's really just spending time doing it and just developing your eye to say what's wrong with it. And, you know, there are like principles that you can go by, but I don't know. I don't worry about following, like, you know, the golden rectangle or whatever. Yeah,
golden ratio.
Yeah, like, you know, I've tried like doing that in the past, thinking like, oh, this will make my designs better. And I found that it didn't. Like, a lot of times you would use it and it still just wouldn't look balanced. But I don't know, just after a while, you just kind of develop an eye for this looks right and this looks wrong.
Yeah.
Do you look at analyze other designers in particular, other furniture? Or do you look at like architecture? Are there any like where?
Yeah,
if you're out to like kind of get influence, I guess what's your
I mean, like, I'll always just like snap pictures of things that I see, or like take a screenshot of something I see online, just, you know, whenever I happen to stumble across it, just to kind of like keep in the back burner, or like in the Rolodex in my mind, I guess, of things that I can pull from. And then at the same time, like, I'm always kind of weary, or just like cautious that I don't want to do it too much, because I don't want to like copy something. I know it's hard, because, you know, if we're building a table, you know, it's 90% the same as every other table. So it's just those little touches that make it unique. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's just basically whenever I stumble across something, I'll take a picture of it. It could be other people's furniture, could be architecture, like you were saying, could be, I mean, just a random one. One time I just saw this like bus stop that caught my eye, the way that this one piece of it was just kind of cantilevered. And I just snapped a picture of it, because I'm like, oh, I could use that for something down the road. So, I mean, it can come from anywhere.
That's so cool. How often do you change your design in the construction phase, or is that almost never happen for you?
Basically, the only time I do that is if I'm making up for a mistake. So like if I cut something slightly too short, but it's not bad enough that it's really going to make a difference, you know, I'll make the little adjustments, but you know, it's usually something so minor that it's not really like changing the design of it. It's just changing the math of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty much always pretty much set by the time I start building it.
Yeah. That's generally my workflow as well. So do you start on paper? Do you start in SketchUp? Cause usually I find myself starting in SketchUp these days, cause it's easier for me to judge proportion and stuff like that in 3D.
Yeah. I would say like for anything, like if I do start on paper, it's very, very rough. It's just like very general shapes, or like the, you know, the basic silhouette of something. But I will not, if I did that, like, you know, I'm talking like 5 minutes on paper before I would move over to SketchUp to start really designing it.
Yeah.
Just cause yeah, it's just quicker and it's just easier.
Yeah. So do you have joinery in mind usually when you're trying to lay out the design, or does that come as kind of a secondary thought once you've roughed out your shape? I mean,
I would say secondary for the most part, like unless it's something that, you know, it's a cabinet and I know I'm going to do bevels or miters or whatever, something simple like that. It's pretty much the shape first, the overall shape, and then worrying about the joinery. I try not to like geek out on joinery too much, just because I feel like the only people who are going to really appreciate it are other woodworkers. Yes. So yeah, it's more the overall shape that I'm worried about. And so, yeah, I'm really just thinking, okay, what's best and easiest to make this shape that I have in my mind.
Yeah.
So what's the percentage of the time that you spend designing to the percentage of the time you spend in the shop?
I would say it'll obviously vary by piece, but just to try to ballpark it. So say it was a build that took me 30 hours, probably at minimum 2.5 to 3 hours designing. Like that's like, you know, if I had the idea right away and it was perfect, and now it's just like the refining. But then obviously the big variable would be how long does it take you to come up with that basic idea?
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense to me, because I feel like that is one of the big kind of advantages you have over a lot of the other YouTube channels, is just this design sense that, I mean, it's clear that you put a lot of time into these things, you know, and that's...
Yeah.
A lot of people don't take that time, and it shows, I feel like, you know, it especially if you're trying to become a furniture builder who has their own kind of sense of style, I feel like putting that time in, it's hugely important. And I mean, it's something that I'm constantly trying to work towards, and you know, it's really difficult to try to come up with your own designs that are not super derivative of other stuff you've seen on, you know, Pinterest or Google Images or wherever. And it's really time consuming. It's not something that I think I knew going in, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you, first of all. But yeah, like I get a lot of comments from people like, oh man, I wish I could woodwork like you or whatever. And I'm like, seriously, anybody could do what I'm doing. Like, I'm not that good of a woodworker. I would say a decent woodworker at best. And I spend a lot of time designing things.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I feel like I could easily walk my wife through building pretty much anything that I build.
Well, that was my
comment. By the way, my wife is a master woodworker.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh.
I'm joking.
I was going to say, that's rare. I wish my wife was a master woodworker. She could help me. She could help me do stuff. Yeah, well, that's what, like, I think I was talking to you when we were testing everything out on Tuesday. Like, that's one of the coolest things is your shop is not some, like, you know, dream shop that's like 5,000 square feet and just full of every tool you've ever known or heard of. You know, it's a pretty basic shop, you know? So I feel like it makes it more accessible and approachable because it's clear that it's not the tools, you know what I mean? It's the brain.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's definitely,
the design.
I mean, yeah, it's not like, you know, it's definitely a good shop and I'm
sure,
able to do
sure.
stuff in there, but yeah, it's not out of reach from your average person. Your average person, if they really, really want to do this, they could do this.
It's not Mark Spagnuolo. That's I think.
Yeah, well, I think the same way. Like, I mean, now for it's kind of a little bit different from James because he's strictly, you know, pretty much hand tools only, and there's certainly an art with that takes time to acquire. And even, you know, I do a little bit of both, and even, you know, hand planing and, you know, stuff like that. There's certainly, you're not going to get a joiner plane your first go and perfectly flatten a board for a tabletop.
There's muscle memory and that kind of stuff there.
Yeah, you certainly have to develop that. But when it comes to, you know, power tools and stuff, I feel the same way. I mean, it's not really, if you're methodical and you check twice and you make sure everything is dialed up and lined up and you actually just think through everything, it's almost like a math problem and you know what you're doing, then it's actually not that hard. I mean, yeah. I think the hard part and the respectable part in that realm is the design, you know, and what are you going to do and how are you going to do it and, you know, why are you doing it? I think that's kind of gets at the heart of the things. Why are you building this table? Are you building it so that you can have something to set stuff on? Are you building it to be attractive? And then it goes into the whole, you know, other branches of, well, why,
what's,
how do you want it to be attractive? What style are you going
to
do? What color are you going to do? All these different, you know, aspects. But if you really get down to it, it's, you know, it's the construction of it is really not that hard unless you're James.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing because realistically I have been woodworking for less than like a year and a half. So, you know, if you really dig into it, you can learn a lot and really put out some really cool pieces pretty quickly because at the end of the day, I mean, unless you're trying to just do some insane thing with every angle and every curve known to man and, you know, hand carved this and that, you know, most furniture is pretty basic at the end of the day, you know, I mean, especially if you're building like shaker style stuff or anything like that, it's really basic. So,
well, it's kind of the baby steps thing too. I mean, obviously have the sense to not start out building a high boy or something.
Maloof rocker. I mean, it's like,
I mean, that's not a good first project.
No. Patio furniture. That's my recommendation.
Yeah. I mean,
do an Adirondack
start
chair.
Start with a miter joint, you know, like start with the fundamentals. It doesn't even have to be for a project. Just start with whatever it is, you know, and it's great for your confidence, too, because I can't tell you every project I do. I try and make it about 110% of my ability. And then when I finish it, I can go, oh, my God, like I feel great because I didn't think I could do this. It's the same thing with my chop truck project. Like I welded on patch panels over the rust spot. So I cut them out with an angle grinder, formed 18 gauge steel and, welded it in. I never in a million years thought I would be able to do that. And, I've done like three of them now and it's, you know, I just never would have figured I could do it. It's, you know, try it.
Yep.
What's the worst thing that can happen is you have to try it again.
Yep. You're going to waste some materials. That's really it.
Big deal.
Yeah.
But the pros outweigh the cons because if you do that successfully.
Oh, yeah. If you pull it off.
Get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You feel
it's very satisfying.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got a question from the live chat from Joey. So this is for Chris. So he asks, how crazy do you get with sanding and finishing? Do you mostly stick with the same finish or change it up depending on the project?
So for how crazy I get with it, I would say like when I was building commission pieces, I was a lot more thorough with it. And that's kind of one of the things I'll skimp a little bit on for YouTube, just because, you know, you want to get the project finished and move on to the next one.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to be touching it until Feel-O-Vision gets invented. I'm okay. but yeah, I would say, I tend to pretty much, so in the past I used this one product a lot called, it's called Hard Oil Number 9 by a company, BioShield. It's basically rub it on, rub it off. More innuendos there for you. But yeah, I mean, I would honestly just like stick with that with almost everything I was doing, unless it was like, you know, the gnocchi board that I made where it needed to be food safe, or, you know, if it was a tabletop or something that was going to get a lot of wear on it, then I might get a little fancier. But finishing is like definitely not my expertise. And something that I would like to get a lot better at. I mean, for my philosophy now with YouTube is like whatever gets it done quick.
Yeah, that's why I use so much spray shellac and spray polyurethane, because it's like the fastest possible YouTube finish ever. All of the small stuff I do. Yes.
Don't forget about lacquer for pure speed.
Yeah.
My God, that stuff is magical. It's like, it's pretty much like sprayable super glue.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? Finishing is funny too, because I feel like it's one of the most common questions that I actually get in my YouTube comments. I'm not sure how it is for you guys, but I feel like everybody wants there to be this just like magical, use this and all you do is just like, you know, put it in your mouth and spit it at the piece and it'll come out perfect.
It works on everything.
But yeah. It's just, I don't know.
It's a pain in the butt for everybody.
That was hands down, like that slab video I just put out. Like, I got so many questions on the finish because it was a pretty involved finish. Like, I did.
Yeah, it seriously was, man.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of steps in that. I did BLO and then garnet shellac and then a glaze coat of gel stain.
And you like wiped off the hardwood or the heartwood too. I mean, you did a whole another. That was crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot to that, but it was cool. I read that Jeff Jewett's book, so now I feel like I'm Superman when it comes to finishing.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I just actually last night for the first time I used some General Finish products. I was talking to them and I had them send me out some products to try out.
Nice.
Excuse me. And so yeah, it came out really good. I really liked it. So I want to try to work with them and see if I can get them, kind of for selfish reasons, to maybe like send somebody out and I can produce some videos to like learn about finishing or something. Then you know, I can kind of selfishly learn about finishing and have a pro there to help me.
They have a surprisingly good YouTube channel, by the way, because they've sent me a bunch of stuff too. Yeah. I use almost exclusively their stuff and I'm a huge fan of their products. I think they make very little that is not good. But yeah, they have a really thorough YouTube channel on basically all of their finishes, because I had to do like some staining recently on that sideboard project, and I had never really done staining before, and I was super intimidated by it, but I just watched all their videos and they were great. So yeah,
I was impressed with what I used last night, so I'm definitely gonna try to work with them and use some more things going forward.
What'd you use? Was it like Armor Seal or?
Yeah, it was I can't remember the exact name of it. I can look it up, but
it's basically,
it was basically just a wipe on, wipe off the excess. I can't remember what the exact name of it was. Matte finish.
Yeah. Yeah. Their stuff is, I don't think I've used anything that I haven't liked. It's super versatile. I mean, I've used their Seal-O-Cell as like kind of the base coat to bring out like a really high figured wood, and then the Armor Seal on top of that, and that's kind of like a wipe on kind of oil based finish type of thing. But I've also
that's what it was.
Yeah, that stuff is amazing.
I think if you're just starting out, like the Danish oil is pretty solid.
Yeah,
pretty solid way to go. I mean, it's not the strongest, it's not the best, but it'll get by, and it's Yeah. It's super foolproof to apply. You put on, you know, 2 or 3, 4 coats of that stuff, and you're going to be doing all right.
Or Minwax. Well, the other thing wipe was finishing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, the Danish oil is pretty much it's a combination of poly, mineral spirits, and boiled linseed oil or tung oil. Anything. Yeah. And another thing out there too is there's a lot of misconceptions about tung oil. So most things that say tung oil are essentially Danish oil, unless they specify that they are 100% tung oil, and in which case they are 100% tung oil. But you have to build almost a ridiculous amount of coats to get a solid barrier and, you know, protection coat with that stuff. But the tung oil that's not 100% or the Danish oil stuff is a pretty good product. It's pretty simple. It's not going to be the best to hold up for like a kitchen table or something like that, but it's a good way to go.
Yeah, I think it was the Armor Seal oil and urethane top coat. Yeah. I think that's what I was using.
I think that's the best thing they make. It's you could basically use it on every single project, and it's
incredible. It's super simple.
Yeah, and it's really durable too. Like that's what they recommended I use on the conference table that I built recently, and I used it on a slab coffee table I built like over a year ago, and I can barely see any wear on it whatsoever. It's a really they recommend under that the Sealicel if it's like a highly figured wood that supposedly brings out, it's like a deeper penetrating oil, and then after the one coat of Sealicel then you move to Armor Seal. But I guess Mark from Wood Whisper, he's done experiments and said that it doesn't make any difference whatsoever, and it's basically redundant product. So, there's
specifically it penetrates the end groin like no other.
Yeah, super, super groin penetrating for sure. All right. So, James, I feel like you were trying to say something like 3 times, and I feel like we cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the one thing that I tell people when they start asking me questions about finishes is, you will never know how the finish will work for you until you try it.
For sure.
And the only way you're ever going to learn about finish, I mean, you can watch every video online about it. You can talk to every professional about it. The only way you're ever going to answer your question is if you, you know, buy some and test it out and play around with it.
Yep.
It's really, there is no other way to learn about a finish other than getting it and playing with it.
Yeah,
this is kind of turning into a finish discussion, which is great because I think
design.
I mean this is a hot topic right now. I mean for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things that I have kind of recently, it's not something I've always done, but man, test first always. Like whatever you're doing, if you're doing something that you haven't done a dozen times, or if you're doing what you have done a dozen times on a different type of wood, take an offcut, buy an extra foot more than you need, take a panel and hopefully it's more than just an inch by an inch. Get something that has, you know, that's you know, a couple inches by a couple inches, maybe 4x4 or something. And before you finish, or like I said, if you're trying something new, before you do it to your main piece, trust me, like test it out first. Cause that huge slab table, it wasn't in the video because it was already long, but man, I screwed that thing up once. And then there's a picture of it on my Instagram, and even in the video, I think, of me with the cutoff, and I did like 4 or 5 different finishes on it. You can see the stripes on it. And that was me trying to figure out, okay, what I thought was going to work was way off. So these are 5 different options, and I let the client pick from which one of those they wanted. So, I mean, it's certain things, and especially if you're working with dyes, the color will significantly change on a dye, and that's what bit me, is when you put a clear coat over it. So just save yourself some trouble.
Yeah, that, and I would add to that, if so, at the very least, again, like if you're using something that you've used plenty of times, when you start on a piece, start with the parts that are inconspicuous. So like I'll always just kind of turn it upside down and do, you know, the underside of the top. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. Is a place that no one's going to look at. So if everything's going good there, then you can get the confidence to do the top of the top.
Yep.
Yeah. The bottom of the table is typically my test piece.
Because
you know, if it's not going to be seen anyway, I'll try the whole finish there.
For sure.
Unless I have an offcut.
Yeah. Yeah, I always do the bottom first anyway because I use those like painter pyramid things. So it's just convenient. Yeah. Just do it first. If it looks terrible, then I'll stop and try something else.
I don't
know
if I got the wrong painter pyramids, but man, those things, every time I use them, they dig into my work.
I agree. They always dent my work. I've been trying to, I bought another like different brand because like I watched Matt Cremona's like 20-minute video on finishing and he used them and I assumed they would be great, and I've tried two different brands now, and I agree.
Well, they suck. The trick to painter's pyramid is having enough of them to spread out the weight.
Yeah.
I've used a lot of people try to have four for every project, and if it weighs much of anything, it will, because you're putting all the weight of the project on the point of the pyramid.
Do you remember like 10 years ago when you used to order pizzas, and they had those little white like center table things in them?
Little Barbie tables?
Yeah. Like,
Papa John's?
I think like I need to order some really large pizzas because they don't put them in normal ones anymore.
Well,
maybe they just didn't know how to make boxes back then or something. But yeah, those things I feel like would be really nice. So
John Peters,
maybe get a sponsorship by like Pizza Hut or something.
He takes like a brad nail and puts it up through like a little scrap of wood or whatever, and that's his kind of paint standoffs, and so it has a much finer point. So I feel like that makes a lot of sense because, if the point was so small that you could barely see the dent, that would obviously be even better. But anyway,
I've been lucky because most of the people want me to do stuff that has like steel legs and a wood top. So I put in, I have those ferrules, the threaded ferrules inserts that I screw into the wood. So I'll actually put that into the bottom, screw the bolts into the bottom, and then when I flip it over, that's actually the thing just stands on the bolts that end up going through the leg. So it's perfect.
Nice. Cool. Well, I guess let's go ahead and move into what we've been watching or reading or whatever. What, Chris, you want to kick us off since you're our guest? You got anything prepared?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I don't have anything prepared, but I'll make something up. So I'll recommend a YouTube channel that I actually talked about him in the coaster video that I made, the Nerd Rider.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if any of you guys have watched that, but
yes,
it's not woodworking at all. But he basically just does like video essays every week. Sometimes they're a little political, so maybe some people might not agree with them. I'm not a very political person, so I don't really care. But they're like super informative. He's like, they're really slickly put together. I don't know if slickly is a word, but sure. Why not? You know what I mean? They're like super good. I feel like he's like everything that's good about YouTube and like, trying to go away from the whole, I don't know, videos of cats thing to show that there can be like legit good content on the platform.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. No, he, it's funny. I actually started checking him out after you recommended him, and then I moved on to that Wisecrack channel, which I think they're in some way connected or something. I don't know. But then he did like the philosophy of The Purge, that movie The Purge.
Yeah.
And then he like referenced all this Rick and Morty stuff, which I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan. So yeah, that sent me down a deep YouTube rabbit hole. So yeah, Nerd Rider.
Yeah, it's cool because it's
great.
It always kind of reminds me of like, I don't know, just like those conversations you'd have with your friends at like 2 a.m. where you're just like getting way too deep into something.
Yeah.
That's basically what he does in his videos.
It's like
he
Netflix
just like
philosophy.
Overanalyzes something. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Cool. James, I see you got one down here.
Yeah. It's a channel called SV Seeker.
Yes.
He is making a boat in his front yard. And when I say a boat, I mean a 50-foot long Chinese junk.
Yes. He is amazing.
It's like an 8-man crew, 2-sail, monstrous boat that he's been building for a couple years, and it is fascinating to watch how he problem solves and figures out things, and just a really, really cool channel that I am always hooked on.
Yeah, he's amazing, and I think you can like just go help too. I think you can just go like to his house and help him build this boat if you have a week off or whatever. It's a really interesting concept. Yeah, that dude is nuts. Yeah, Zach, how about you, man?
So I was handed the channel pass the other day from a guy named Colin Black Byron, who does like he's getting into some DIY stuff, but he does a lot of like gardening and the aqua, whatever the fish aquarium stuff. And yeah, he handed me a channel pass, and actually one in the video he talked about a guy named William Osman. And this dude is absolutely hilarious. Like he has a video called How to Make a Net Gun. That's the only one I've watched yet. But his sense of humor is just, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely hilarious. You have to watch it. He's good.
Nice.
And he's only got like 1,900 subscribers, so he certainly deserves more than that. Yeah, so that's what I've been watching.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at his channel art, and I just subscribed because that looks amazing.
Yeah.
His profile picture looks like Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I like the reviews, the feathers, like it's a it's good. Check him out. He's hilarious.
So mine, I guess I guess it has nothing to do with making. It's this show Westworld on HBO. I don't know if you guys have seen this. God, man, I have just been super into this show, and the whole concept fascinates me, and I don't know, I feel like that's where like we're headed as a society, into this kind of like virtual reality AI kind of world. And I'm a total tech nerd, so I can see this stuff happening within the next like 20 years, and it's a really interesting concept and really, really well done. One of the most enjoyable shows I've watched in a while, so yeah, highly, highly recommended. I guess it's got a bit of a making vibe, because they're making like robot humans. So, you know,
for people who are unfamiliar, so one of the main characters in the show, her name's Dolores, so that's my wife's name too. So we're always joking that I'm predicting there's going to be like a resurgence of the name Dolores now because of that show.
Nice, nice.
I believe it.
That's like Bella when Twilight came out. I'm pretty sure there was Cool. Well, I guess the last thing for us to discuss is our favorite tool of the week. So who wants to kick us off? Zach, I guess you got something written here.
Yeah. So it's amazing what a nice pair of scissors will do for your shop. I think I bought them at Home Depot, or I think it was Home Depot. It could have been Lowe's, but you guys are familiar with WIS, the brand. Yeah. They make some tools like aviation snips and stuff, which are necessary if you're working with sheet metal. But I think the ones that I have are the W10TMs. I think they're $20 or $18 or something like that. They're incredible. I use them for all sorts of stuff, and I don't know if they're ceramic or what, but they're really stiff and sharp. Like I said, you really don't know what you're missing from a good pair of scissors until you have them. Like cutting zip ties with the tips of the scissors, like the end, you don't have to like try and cram it up there so that it's close to the handle. And shop towels. Like one of the things I spend pretty much any time I go to the like Woodcraft or something, they sell boxes of white t-shirts, and I burn through those things so fast. But it's nice to be able to cut them up into smaller pieces and stuff like that. Anyway, buy them. It's like $20, and you'll use them all the time.
So. Nice. My favorite tool of the week, I don't know if it's even considered a tool, but it's this Cadet branded, like it's like a shop space heater. It's called the Hot One, but it's like the one I got is five. But yeah, another bit of an innuendo there.
This is a full out window.
Yeah, seriously. But it's 5,000 watts. It runs on 240. And man, it is incredible. I have my shop is like a two bay garage. It's probably at least 40 feet wide by like 25 feet deep. And like, I only,
that like, sounds way bigger than a two bay, man. Mine's a two bay, and it isn't near that.
Well, so it's got two separate doors with a door in between. Is that a two bay? I don't even know. I don't know.
How many cars can you fit in there?
Four, I guess. Wait.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, so it's limited by the actual space of the door itself, but I'm pretty sure you could fit four cars in there comfortably. It's enormous.
I could fit like Mine's a two, and I could fit like maybe maybe my truck and my motorcycle in there if I didn't have.
Yours is about half the size of my garage. It's I have an enormous garage for whatever reason, and so heating it is very difficult. And
what's the temperature up there?
It's like 20 degrees right now, I think, something like that. Ooh, it's quite nippy.
That's warm.
Yeah. So and you know, it's not even like, okay, yeah, being cold sucks, but I can put on a jacket. It's the finishing and stuff like that that's really tricky. You know, I want my finishes to cure in a reasonable amount of time or ever. So this space heater thing has been a total godsend. I had to like rewire one of the outlets because it has this weird plug on it. But besides that, it's been total plug and play, and I just let it run all day, and it's relatively quiet, and supposedly 240 is more efficient than 120 or 110. We'll see after I get my power bill, but it's definitely keeping the shop nice and warm. So yeah. Chris, you got a tool of the week?
Again, I did not have anything prepared, but I will make something up. So I will say, to kind of go back to what we were talking about earlier and put a little bow on it, I'll say SketchUp will be my tool of the week.
Nice.
I think that it's such a integral part to the way that I work. I just couldn't imagine the way that my brain works. I couldn't imagine being a woodworker without it. And I probably would not have gotten into it if it weren't for SketchUp.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an incredible program. I mean, I use it. I'm kind of the same way you are. I do not step foot in the shop until I have a project completely 3D modeled. And I use the Cutlist extension that's in there, especially if it's a sheet goods project. Like, that thing is amazing. It will tell me exactly how I should cut out the sheets to get the most efficiency out of it. And it's just totally killer. I have a video on that actually on my YouTube. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it is... yeah, it's a great extension, and obviously SketchUp is amazing. So, yeah. James?
I have just purchased a new V-tool, which is a carving chisel that's shaped like a V. And it is one of the simplest and easy ways to do carving in wood. You can follow a pattern very easily, and any novice in 15 minutes can actually do really nice looking hand carved pieces with just a V tool and a mallet. For the price, you just can't beat it. It's a great tool to have on hand.
Nice. Cool. Well, I guess that's going to do it. We have, I think, yacked long enough. We are running a little long today, so that's good. So I guess let's go ahead and wrap it up. So if you guys are unfamiliar with the show, definitely check out our website, craftedpodcast.com. We got more information. You can find all of our older episodes there. Chris, thank you so much for being on this week. This was a lot of fun.
Man, it was awesome. Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, for sure. We'll definitely have you back again in the future. If you guys have any, you know, ideas or suggestions for other guests you want us to have on the show, let us know. And also make sure to check us out on Patreon. That is a great way to support us and help cover the costs associated with this podcast. So I think that's going to do it. Oh, one last thing. Rate the podcast on iTunes. That is super helpful for us. So don't forget to do that. I think that's going to do it, guys. Until next week, happy building. Thanks for being on, everybody. As always.
See you next time.
Take care.
All right.